Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Kristen Russell. She is a CEO of CBTS. She is a dynamic, future-focused leader who is steering her organization through a major transformation, evolving the company from a traditional infrastructure and managed services provider into a market leader in AI-enabled digital transformation. She has over 20 years experience in working in technology. Her career has taken her from being a president of Arrow Electronics Global Enterprise Computing Solutions Division. And earlier, she held key leadership roles in Deloitte Consulting, Oracle, and Sun Microsystems. She also served as the state of Colorado's Secretary of Technology and Chief Information Officer. Kristen has some great thoughts to share, things that she's learned in her career, and I'm looking forward to you hearing some of her thoughts today. Looking forward to our conversation with Kristen. It's great to have Kristen joining us for our conversation. Appreciate you taking time out of your week to chat with us.
Thanks, Mark. I love that you're doing these, and it's just such a pleasure to be on the show with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love to hear people's stories. I love to hear kind of how they've gotten to where they are and love to hear your career story and how that kind of from early on to where you are today.
Yeah. So my story is a pretty circuitous one. And I use that word in term very deliberately because you can't really track why I made the decisions that I did, but 30 years in tech and a lot of different types of jobs. And again, that's really code for word for I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do when I grew up. And so I just came into different opportunities and I evaluated them really on two criteria. One, can I teach? And two, can I learn? So is there something that I don't know? And then is there something that I can learn from this role and this job? So that really took me through a lot of different types of roles. And I got the chance to, you know, work at incredible companies like Sun Microsystems and Oracle and Deloitte. Probably the most notable career move I made that I get the questions most about is when I was appointed as the first Secretary of Technology and CIO for the state of Colorado. But I always have been interested in this intersection between technology and humans and how we can actually use technology to help advance actually humans and companies in their endeavors. And most recently, I took the role as CEO of CBTS, which is an IT solutions company headquartered out of Cincinnati. And it's an amazing company. It's where we talk about making our customers heroes by helping them design, build, and manage their IT solutions and infrastructure so that they can innovate and grow. And it's just an amazing company where we really are really focused on customers, but also helping them to achieve their missions.
Well, I'd love to ask this question. If you were able to spin back time and talk to that 22-year-old Kristen and give her some advice, knowing what you know now, what would you tell her?
Well, first of all, I think I tell her to just relax a little bit. You know, I grew up in a family of four girls. I was the youngest of four daughters. And, you know, I grew up in a family where, you know, we were told at an early age, we can do anything we want to do. And, you know, the value of hard work and tenacity and perseverance. And I think along with that, somewhere along the way, we picked up this perfectionist gene or DNA about having to have everything right. And I think at 22, and I even talked to my daughters today, I have two daughters, and, you know, as they're trying to determine what they are going to do in the world, especially now with what's happening, especially in technology, it's really confusing. And there's a lot of pressure on, it has to be the perfect job and it has to be, you know, in this arena at this location. And there's just so much pressure. And I think that that hasn't changed. And I certainly would tell myself, as what I tell my daughters, don't worry so much. It all works out in the end. And as long as you just, you know, are curious and you want to continue to learn and you work hard, it all works out. I mean, it's not on my resume or in my LinkedIn, but my first job out of college was working for the railroad. And I mean, nobody goes to work at the railroad. Sure. It's not the dream ideal job coming out of college, but it was this incredible opportunity. And I remember just thinking, like, what am I going to do at the railroad? But again, it was this amazing inflection point in my early career about how I could just absorb a lot of different things and learn. And that really helped to set me up for all the different career moves. So that I think that would be my advice. Just stop stressing. Don't worry. It's all going to work out. Just have fun, and, you know, learn as much as you can and be, you know, tenacious.
So you mentioned a job that you probably wouldn't have thought was a great, obvious next step. Any others that you had in your career that you thought, oh, it didn't seem to make sense just to take that move? And but what did you learn from it? Any other roles that stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to when I was appointed as Secretary of Technology and CIO for the state of Colorado. I mean, you know, I had no background in public sector. And so when the then governor and his transition committee came to me and said, we're looking for the state's first consolidated chief information officer and secretary of technology, I was at Oracle, and I had been running Oracle's global data centers and computing operations worldwide. And the person from the transition committee actually called me and said, you know, we're looking for this person. We've looked at 600 resumes. We can't find the right person. And I naively was like, well, have you called Joe? Have you called, you know, Sally? Like, have you called all these other people? And he said, Kristen, I don't think you understand. We want you to actually apply for this job. And I was like, what are you talking about? I don't even know what government does. I have no public sector background. Like, this is a bad idea. Not to mention the significant pay cut. But I got into this process, Mark, of talking to the governor and the lieutenant governor, and they actually asked the job, like, why do you want this job? And I was like, I don't think I do want this job. I was, you know, my husband and I talked about this wasn't on the career path plans. Sure. And that. But at the end of the day, and it was written in this book called Leadocracy, and I just felt like this was my time to serve. And I felt that, you know, I, again, back to kind of the two principles of can I learn and can I teach, I knew I could help them with enterprise IT. I'd run massive global organizations, but I also knew that I could learn so much. And I did learn so much. I learned so much about people and, you know, how to communicate with different stakeholders and how to think about the impact of your decisions and the legacy of your leadership, you know, now and in the future. And so I'm very thankful and so grateful for that career move, even though at the time when I had to come home and tell my husband that I actually took the job, even though we had talked about, you know, taking the job. I told him, I'm like, I promise it will all work out. And it did, sure. Thankfully.
So I think a lot of leaders struggle with feeling like they're an imposter. They've been put into a role where they feel like I really don't know exactly what I'm doing, and hopefully nobody will discover that. How do you get over that, or do you ever get over that as a leader?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure you ever get over it. I mean, I always joke that I've never, you know, taken a job that I've been fully prepared or, you know, ready for, or you know that was. Because of course you haven't done the job before, right? So you're never totally qualified for the job that you're about to take. And I think that you have to get comfortable with that feeling of being uncomfortable as you go through your career. But there's a couple of things that I've always, you know, relied upon is that, especially as a leader, you know, the job is really to listen, you know, very closely to customers and employees. And if you listen intently enough, you pick up all these breadcrumbs and ideas and thoughts about where the business needs to go. And as a leader, you know, your job is to really provide that clarity to the organization and help them get aligned And so to me, it's not really, you're not getting hired because you have to know every single thing about every nook and cranny of the company, but rather how do you help lead the company forward? And you can do that effectively by listening to others. And, you know, as a woman in mostly male dominated careers, you know, sometimes I was the only one in the room. And, you know, I had to kind of tell myself, you deserve to be in the room. You belong in the room.
So new leaders always, a lot of times they don't have the luxury of hiring their team. They inherit a team.
Yeah.
But what would you say around that whole idea of kind of leading that first team? What do you wish you would have known earlier? And also that first hire that you had to make as a leader?
Yeah. So I'm a fan of the book Traction and the Enterprise Operating System. And you know, in that book, they talk about a criteria of GWC. And GWC is a criteria for not only hiring new leaders into your team, but also evaluating people on your team that you inherit. And the G stands for get it. So do they get what the job is and what, you know, what you're asking them to do? W is, do they want it? Do they have a desire to actually, you know, they have energy and excitement about the job. And then C is capability. So do they have the capability to do the job? And, you know, sometimes, you know, when I've used this criteria, sometimes they get it and they want it, but they don't have the capability. Or sometimes they get it and they have the capability, but they really don't want to do it. And so I think that it's a good tool to just kind of triangulate your thoughts around your leadership team, you know. Do you have the right people in the right seats to go forward? And then secondarily, how do you evaluate new folks coming in? And, you know, again, I mean, the phrase that culture eats strategy for lunch is true. I fundamentally believe that. And so culture fit is also another thing that's super important to me. When I think about that, and culture fit is not, to me, hiring the same type of person with the same type of personality, with the same type of background. It's really looking at how does that leadership team form and become more powerful and stronger because they have assembled all of these diverse and different people with different viewpoints. But the fundamental culture fit is, are there values that underpin how that leadership team, almost like an operating system, that leadership team is going to operate? One more thing on that, Mark, too, is that I think when you know that you have somebody that may not be the right person on your team, you need to act quickly and, you know, with humanity. I think the bigger thing that people regret, especially leaders, and you probably know this from your work, the number one regret that CEOs have is that they didn't take care of leadership problems, right, you know, or talent problems fast enough. And, you know, I always tell my team, if you think you have a problem, you do. And, you know, everybody's just waiting for you to take care of it and figure out how to get the team back aligned. So that would be my other, you know, advice.
Yeah, that's great. So what boundaries have you set in your career? What did you learn from setting those boundaries?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, you know, as a mother of two, and I had my children right as my career was taking off. Sure. And so there is a really important to understand kind of who you are and what you need to recharge and really serve the multiple different roles that we all have in our lives. And so I think some of the boundaries, I mean, you know, are really, they seem kind of crazy, but I'm a little bit maniacal about my schedule in terms of, okay, when do meetings start? What days do I have as kind of thinking strategy days where I don't have as many meetings, you know, how do I think about travel in terms of how often I'm on the road, how often I'm at home, how much time do I spend with customers versus employees versus internal meetings? So I try to be pretty planful about that because I realize that, you know, if you aren't, you kind of fall into the next week and before you know it, you're burned out and you're, you know, you know, trying to operate on fumes and you're like, what happened this week? And so I try to be actually pretty militant about how I look at my schedule in terms of setting boundaries. And then I think in general, you know, we all have to look at ourselves in the mirror and just make sure that we are living up to the values and the integrity and the character of the leader that we want to be. And it's not to say that any of us are perfect every single day, every single year, but I really try to look at that and understand, am I living within my values? Am I proud of how I'm showing up? And do I think about like the legacy that I lead? And that sounds weird because that doesn't sound like a boundary, but for me, it's an important litmus test to make sure that I'm living as true to myself as I can be.
So I think one of the challenges that most CEOs face is working with a board for the first time.
Yeah.
And so I think that's maybe where some of the imposter syndrome is present. But what have you learned about working with a board? What are some things that you would say to a new CEO as far as in how to manage that relationship?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things. I mean, one, a board is made up of people, of human beings that all have their lives and their own insecurities and their own fears and their own dreams and things like that. And so one, you know, really understanding each individual and where they're at and what they need. You know, I've always tried to approach my job and leadership in general as, you know, if I help other people get what they want, then I get everything I need. And the board is kind of no different from that. It's really understanding each person and developing a relationship with them. Boards are different depending on their remit. You know, if it's a private equity board or it's a public board, you know, their approach to board governance is a little bit different. And so you need to understand the environment in which you're working with the board. And then the third thing I would say is just lean in. You know, they're there to help you. And in almost every single case, there's aligned self-interest in terms of what they want is what you want. And, you know, working with them, in my opinion, in my experience, always bears better results than trying to push them out or not trying to engage them on strategic things. And so it does take a lot more time. I mean, you think about a CEO and you're like, oh, you just moved to not having a boss. And it's like, well, no, actually, I have a boss. I have like 8 or 9 bosses now, right, versus none. But It's at the end of the day, they're people. And so really thinking about what makes them tick and what they need and what their remit is and how you can be helping them be successful.
Mm, that's good. So you mentioned a book, Traction. Yes. Any other books that you refer to and recommend to other leaders?
Yeah, I'm kind of one of those nerds that takes business books on vacation. And so I love them. I love a good book and love recommendations. There's kind of 3 that I would say are my go-to, 4 including Traction. But The First 90 Days by Michael Watkins, mm-hmm. I've used that every single career transition, including my most recent one, to just get my head centered on, you know, what do I need to do, you know, really quickly out of the gate to kind of take over, you know, take those small wins and make sure that I'm aligning to the mission. Good to Great, which is obviously an awesome book. And then The 5 Dysfunctions of Team. And I've used that one as well with my leadership team, because at the end of the day, you know, most companies, especially CBTS, we're a company of humans, right? That, you know, we don't create a product, we deliver services to our customers. And so I'm only as good as the person on the front lines, you know, working with our customer. And so making sure that the leadership team is really functioning is super important to the organization. It's kind of like when you're growing up and your parents get into an argument or whatever, it makes you feel as a child insecure. It's like, I really think that the leadership team of corporations needs to make sure that people know that they're in charge and that they're okay. So those are probably my 3 that I love, but I'm always interested in new recommendations.
So any quotes that you like to share with others?
Yeah, there's one by Zig Ziglar, which says, you can have everything in life you want if you just help other people get what they want. And it goes back to my leadership philosophy that, you know, if you care deeply enough about others and what they need, you'll get everything you need in back in spades. So it's just, it's a very simple philosophy.
So with technology being in the news, with AI being on everybody's mind and kind of how it's going to impact how we work, any thoughts around that? What are you excited about? And what do you find that maybe employees are maybe nervous about?
Yeah, I mean, it's, listen, you can't open your laptop or look at anything without AI being just everywhere. And I think that, you know, when I look back at, you know, technology trends, there's always been, you know, new technology that has come onto scene that, you know, there's lots of predictions. I mean, I remember, you know, even with cloud computing, it's going to erase all jobs and there's going to be no more IT departments and things like that. And the reality is, I always think that there's application of the technology that settles into something that's a little bit different than kind of what the polaristic, you know, predictions kind of encompass. But I do think that this is a really transformative time. I think it's one of the most transformative times for us, not just in technology, but as humans. And I think that, you know, I like to think of, it's not artificial intelligence, it's augmented intelligence. So we'll never replace humans at the core of what we do. But if we can augment them in ways so that they can be more effective and we can get into kind of that part of their brain and their human aspect that really brings so much wonder to the world, that's a good thing for us. So I look at it as there's tremendous opportunity. And of course, there's also a lot of fear for it. And, you know, what I tell people, I talk to people and they say, well, what should I tell my children to, you know, major and in college, and, you know, what are there going to be any jobs? And I would say, of course, there's going to be jobs, and they're going to be maybe different jobs than they are today. And that they should follow whatever their passion is. They should do what they, you know, if it's art or it's science or it's, you know, healthcare, whatever it is, go follow your passion. AI will be a part of all jobs going forward, but it doesn't mean that it's going to take all jobs going forward. And so I think that there are tremendous opportunity. And at CBTS, we really try to counsel our customers on how do they think, you know, about this from a foundational standpoint. How is their data established? How is their infrastructure established? What's their strategy? Things like that, that maybe are not the sexiest things, the parts of what we're hearing about with AI, but we really believe that those foundations and getting those foundations right will actually help them to accelerate and really innovate and grow.
Yeah, that's good. So outside of work, what do you enjoy doing to recharge?
Well, I love to sleep. I love spending time, obviously, with my family. I love to travel. I love to cook. I love to exercise. The nice thing is that you get to know yourself and you know what kind of you need to be able to recharge. And for me, it's sometimes spending time alone, as I am an introvert, even though I play an extrovert on TV, kind of thing. But I love to do those things, being outside, being with family.
What parting advice would you give a newer up and coming leader?
Yeah, I would say, you know, be kind to both yourself and others, right? Be curious and be courageous.
Great. So how would somebody learn more about your company and about your work?
Yeah, so please come to cbts.com. We would love to talk to you about the things that we do. It's an incredible company. We have amazing customers, and we've had the privilege of serving those customers for decades. And it's a really cool, great environment from an employee standpoint too. So we'd love to share more about what we do.
Well, thanks, Kristen. I appreciate it and definitely wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Thanks, Mark, so much. And thanks for doing these leadership sessions.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.